to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina, and I'm joined each and every week by my co-host, Scott Chu. Welcome, Scott. And as we're recording this podcast at about, what is it, about 12:30 on Sunday, May 30th, Scott, your Tigers are preparing to potentially sweep my New York Yankees. What's that all about?
Well, now that you've said it out loud, there's no chance, right? Like, well, it's one of those things. When the Tigers are winning some games, the one thing you can't really do is talk about it. Because the moment you talk about it, they go on another, like, 12-game losing streak. But, I mean, this is – we're going to kind of talk about this in a little bit. But this is one of those things where anyone can be good for a little bit, right? Like, there's – every team's got just enough hitters and, like, maybe just enough pitching to swing through a couple series, especially if they run into some softer teams like the Royals or a team that isn't putting it all together at this exact moment like the Yankees. So, I mean, is Jamer Candelario gonna like be an all-star? Absolutely not. Has he played like one for a week and a half? So, I mean, that can happen. That can happen at any point in fantasy and real. It doesn't matter. You can, anyone can be hot for a while. And you can take advantage of that. And, you know, like me as a Tigers fan, I'm watching games every day again. And there'll probably come a point where maybe I skip a couple because, you know, I need to recover. But right now, it's time to watch.
Well, look, a 162-game season is a series of hot streaks and cold streaks, right? So it's bound to happen. And no excuses here. Yankees offense has been horrible. I mean, can't make excuses because every team has had their fair share of injuries. Can't blame them just on injuries. And you've alluded to this before. Yanks have a lot of muscle-bound players on their rosters, and sometimes big muscles, sometimes they translate into big injury problems.
Yeah, I mean, more muscles, more things to hurt. Right? Yeah, like, that's why I don't keep very many of them around. You know, I got to try to stay healthy. I don't want to – I don't have a lot of muscles to pull, right? I don't have a lot of muscles to strain. It works out great for me. But, yeah, I mean, some of these bigger players – it's just tough to stay healthy when you're that large. You can look at basketball, you can look at football. When you're really big, it's really hard. I mean, the human body can only handle so much. Right. And at certain sizes, like Aaron Judge size, you know, who's as big as an offensive tackle.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I get it. It's not their fault. And sometimes they stay healthy forever. Health is a little bit of luck and a little bit of genetics and a little bit of, you know, being huge, right? Like that, it's hard to be huge.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about Judge, and of course, the Yankees have Stanton, another huge guy, and Voit, and both of those guys are frequent visitors to the IL. And I'll just say this, and then we'll move on. I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm a realist, and I feel sometimes that they are a team that's built to be successful more during the regular season, but when they make it to the playoffs, too often, great pitching is going to quiet their good hitting. And the Yankees just have too many guys who swing for the fences, try to swing out of their shoes. And that style of play doesn't always translate into championships there, Scott.
Yeah, no, it's a huge thing. And they've done a lot to try to bring in some pitching to help them on their side. And they do pitch well, right? They have some guys that can come out. But like you said, they run into a buzzsaw here and there. And two, you know, power hitting is streaky at its core.
Yes.
Right? And when you have a lot of power hitters, you can go cold, right? So I don't know if it's necessarily like building for the playoffs or not, because I'm still unsure of exactly how I feel about that at like a micro level. On a macro level, I do believe in it. Like, you need to have some star pitching because you need to be able to quiet hot offensive teams. But for the Yankees and other teams like them, it can be really tough because it's not just about your own roster. It's about what other people can throw at you. When they can throw power pitching to get those, you know, power hitting bats quiet, it's going to be hard for them because they live on home runs.
Yeah. So thanks for hearing me out. This has kind of like been a couple minutes of a therapy session. So sometimes it's not easy being a Yankee fan. People don't realize that. But why don't we move on? And what we wanted to try to talk about this week was using the Memorial Day holiday and other holidays basically as checkpoints to check on the health of your fantasy team. Maybe, you know, take a pause, take an unbiased look at your roster. I mean, at this stage, we still have 4 full months to make up any ground that we have to in the standings in our individual leagues. Also, it's getting to the point there, Scott, where we're going to be able to capitalize on the fact that some of our league mates are going to be starting to focus on fantasy football. So while their attention goes to football, if we maintain our focus on baseball, we could really make up some ground here.
Yeah, and don't I need it, right? Like, I could use some leagues where some folks start thinking about football again. It would really help me a lot. But you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a time where on one hand, we're going to say like, oh, you really got to be thinking about the future. This is when you make trades. This is when you do all that stuff. At the very least, right, this is a time to, you know, sort of let go of some things. Like if you've been waiting this long, and there are players that we've been waiting this long for, and there's no signs of hope, if they come, it might not be worth waiting for them, right? You made it all the way through April, and you were patient, and we applaud you for it. You made it through May because maybe you saw something and that was the right thing to do. But, you know, this is kind of the time to be like, all right, I can't keep holding my team back because I want this player to be good. Because if they've done nothing up until this point, then you're not holding them for upside anymore. You might be holding them for yourself. And
right.
That's not going to win you a lot of leads.
Yeah, like, you know, guys like, and we're going to mention a few of them, but any of these preseason sleepers that you were banking on, like maybe a Jonathan India, it might be time to let go, all right? And obviously we're going to be working that waiver wire. And Scott, as I was putting together some notes, I come back to the point where you talked about that it's possible to be successful at streaming at just about every position. And it's especially effective in shallower leagues, but that's something that you could start doing more of as the season progresses right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really ties into this idea of when you're letting players go. I think one of the biggest mistakes you can make, especially in a more shallow format and a redraft format, is only thinking about who's going to be better rest of season. And Nick Pollock talks about this quite a bit as well, especially on the back half of the list. It's not always about who's going to be the best rest of season, right? It's about who's going to be the best for the next couple of weeks, you know, because that's really how long a lot of players, I mean, really that back end of your roster, probably the last quarter of your roster, those guys don't stick around on your, you know, on your bench all season, right? You don't, how many guys do you add in May or June that are on your roster in September? I mean, just not that many, right? Like obviously some of the top end guys are the breakouts, but a lot of them hit the wire again. You know, the same names are at the top of your wire all season, not necessarily because nobody ever adds them. It's because people add them and then drop them, right? And that's okay. That's what you got to do in this stuff. So when you've got these players that you're like, oh man, like certain players, you know, and I'm not going to go over all of them, but one of them might be like a Didi Gregorius and you're like, all right, or you're a Nick Madrigal, like, all right, I got to move on, right? That doesn't mean you're never going to pick them back up. It just means that there's someone better out there right now, and it's time to go grab that player. If you want to come back for Nick Madrigal later, do it, right? He heats up a little. You see something, go back and get him, right? But right now, those are guys that you can probably think about just letting go and working on something else.
Right. And when you let a player go, you don't always have to replace that player with a superstar, in my opinion. I mean, there are plenty of guys out there. Of course, it also depends on the size of your league, but there's plenty of guys that are capable of plugging some holes in your roster. I mean, I'm just thinking of three that I put on a rundown. Manny Margot, Willy Adames, and Josh Rojas, right? You look at Margot batting a little over 300 over the past 2 weeks, better against left-handed pitching, so better in leagues where you could change your lineups on a daily basis. Adames batting 333 with 7 runs batted in his first 8 games with the Brew Crew. So, I mean, at his core, he has some power, a little speed, and also he's away from Tropicana Field where he only batted 217 for his career there. And Josh Rojas was another guy, you know, a lot of us, including myself, were excited at the start of the season to have him, to roster him, and he slumped, but quietly meeting expectations of fantasy managers who valued him as a sleeper, a 326 batting average in his last 24 games. And even more importantly, you could probably slip him in at second base, shortstop, and outfield.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Rojas is a really interesting example because one of the things about him, it continues to be like, what is that playing time going to continue to look like as the Diamondbacks get healthy? Ketel Marte back in the lineup. We have Christian Walker coming back in the lineup. I wanted to see what was going to happen with Josh Rojas. I mentioned this in the batter's box when I did it back on Monday, and I think again a couple of days ago. The thing about it is, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen, and someone was going to lose playing time, right? Between him and Pavin Smith, you know, two two left-handed bats that kind of serve similar purposes in terms of their lineup. And wouldn't you know it, Josh Rojas is batting leadoff right now. Do I think he's going to be the leadoff hitter for the Diamondbacks the rest of the season? No, I don't. But he is right now, mm-hmm. right? And that means you can use him right now. He's been great in May, right? Like, I don't necessarily have to think that Josh Rojas is going to be this player for the rest of the season or this mm-hmm. player for another month, right? But as of right now, you know, it's not going to keep this way. But he's hitting .344 in the month of May, slugging .531.
Mm-hmm.
He's scoring a whole bunch of runs, 17 runs on the month, right? And that's not even as like a, you know, he's mostly a full-time player mm-hmm. right now. He might not be. He's playing all kinds of positions. Eventually, he won't be, right? Things might break out. But who cares?
Mm-hmm.
If you need to fill in a player in your middle infield or the back end of your outfield and Josh Rojas is out there, go for it. Go for yeah. it and then don't care
mm-hmm.
if you have to cut him later because yeah. that's what streaming is. You let those guys go. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we're talking about working the waiver wire, adding guys and dropping guys, and Rojas is a good example of that. Let's spend just a couple minutes on another way to rebuild your team at this stage, trading. And I know you don't want to get too specific on it because it does depend on the size of your league. There are a lot of different factors, but I'm just going to give you my basic take on it, and then you could add to it, and then we can move on. But my three rules when I trade. First of all, I don't like to trade with teams who are ahead of me in the standings because of my rule number two, which is in general, I think that a trade should help both teams. And I don't want to be helping a team that's either tied with me in the standings or ahead of me in the standings. And my third rule, I like to target a player. When I do, we've talked about this in the past, I'll reach out to my league mate and say, hey, is this guy available? And if he is, take a look at my roster. Tell me what it would take. And sometimes you never know what a fantasy manager is going to come back with. And I know you don't like this style of trading based on our previous conversation, but and I think it's worthwhile just spending a minute or two on trading because you're not only going to, you know, tweak your team through the waiver wire, but it's time to start thinking about some trades as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm a little lazy when it comes to trades. I'm in too many leagues right now. It's hard for me to have all these conversations about trades. So that's part of my bias is that I'm, you know, a lazy bum. But a couple things about trading that I will point out is number one, in redraft, it's really hard. Trading in redraft is really, really hard because you can't trade like future assets, right? You can't, most people are going to value players a very similar way. That makes it difficult to trade,
mm-hmm.
right? The other thing is, you know, in Dynasty, obviously, you know, I don't really care if a team's ahead of me if I'm not competing. In fact, you know, depending if I'm in like a deep keeper or a Dynasty, obviously the thing to do is look for something they need. One thing that I think people should remember is when you look for needs, just because you think it's a need, it doesn't mean the other team's going to think it's a need.
True.
Right? So, and especially if you just talk about a position, I find that talks about positional needs can be kind of tough because someone mm-hmm. might believe in that player at that position, but stat needs are a little easier because you can just point to the scoreboard, right? Like, hey, you are, you know, second to last in runs scored. I have extra runs scored, but need strikeouts or I need, you know, stolen bases. Stolen bases is probably the easiest thing to talk about trading for. It's the mm-hmm. easiest thing to give away. And it's the easiest thing if you need to pick it up to pick up because everyone's trying to unload their stolen bases, right? It's probably the one thing in redraft I trade for the most is stolen bases because I don't draft them a lot because I usually find players just get too expensive for my taste in steals and I just trade for them later, right? Like I can get stolen bases because people want to give them to me
mm-hmm.
and I can trade hitting depth for it. The final thing is what I'll say is, you know, don't be too obvious. Most people are too obvious about identifying buy low candidates and sell high candidates. And your league mates probably aren't stupid. Maybe they are. And that's that's great, right? Free money, whatever. But they're probably not stupid. If they have this huge gap between like their expected stats, like they probably know it and aren't going to be super interested in just unloading them, right? I tend to find the most success is when I'm willing to take a risk. This player hasn't been playing well. The expected stats are bad, but something I see or something I researched in the preseason or something makes me think that I think this is going to turn around, where they'd have to do some real digging to find that out, not just a real quick look at their Statcast page, right? Those are the players to make. Don't worry about winning a trade at the time you made the trade, right? Mm-hmm. I highly recommend using whatever forum. I mean, the Pitcherlist Discord's a great one. Just bouncing trade ideas off of people. But remember, winning the trade at the moment of the trade doesn't matter. You're not trying to win trades. You're trying to win your league. If you think that trade's going to help you win your league, then it's a good trade. Even if other people think, oh, you could have gotten more. You can say that about every trade that's ever been made, pretty much, in fantasy, right? Except for the absolute fleecings. So bounce ideas off people and take risks. That's what trading is. The best trades are when you took a risk.
And it's all subjective, too. Like, someone looks at a trade that you made, oh, I could have done better. Or I always love it when you make a trade and then someone else in your league comes to you and says, you know, I would have given you a lot more than what you got. You know, okay, well, where were you when, you know, I needed you? But anyway, so
I've also found they're never right. They're never right. They'll be like, oh, I would have given you more. I was like, I looked at your roster. You didn't have more.
Yeah. Good point. So as we move on, we're basically a third between a quarter and a third into the season. And we're recording this on Memorial Day weekend and want to say thank you to everyone who has served in the armed forces and given up their lives for the freedoms that we are able to enjoy. But like we said, this is a good time to take a pause and kind of see what's been going on in the world of fantasy baseball. And let's take a look at some of the disappointing players as we look at the first third of the season, basically 50 or so games in. Let's start with Christian Yelich, who was a first-round pick in preseason drafts. He's been dealing with a back injury this season, obviously slumped very badly last season as well. Last season had a 30.8 K rate. This season, it's even a little bit worse, 32%, which is unusual for him. His K rates had been in the lower 20s, if I'm not mistaken. Projection models are optimistic. Between 18 and 21 home runs and a decent batting average rest of the way, if you look at the major projections for him. Is he a guy that you'd be buying right now? And I'll throw this one at you. Luis Castillo, slumping starting pitcher for Christian Yelich in a trade. Would you do it?
Oh, Yelich all the way, right? Mm-hmm. Give me Yelich because at least I know he's going to play, mm-hmm. right? And there are at least some categories he's not going to hurt me in, right? Like just batting third for an okay offense brings stats. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Like I sometimes with a player like him, I try to like focus on little chunks. Like, okay, how's he been since he came back, right? Like since he came back on the 18th. And the answer is like not great, you know, hitting 154, 353 OBP, that's great. But like the slugging is lower than that. It's 346, right? Because he's mm-hmm. he's like getting a lot of walks, things like that. So one of those weird situations where the on base is better than the slugging. But he is, you know, as much as he's striking out, which is also 32%, right? This isn't like a front loaded thing. He's come back from injury. He's still swinging and missing quite a bit. It's gotten a little better over the last two series, right? But like still not great. You know, I'm looking, you know, when you're only looking at five games, there's only so much data you can pull, but he is at least walking a lot. He's not selling, you know, it's easy to speculate that like, oh yeah, the back's bothering him. That's why he's swinging more and he's missing more. He's got a cheat or whatever. He is still being quite patient at the plate and he's actually still stealing bases. He has two steals since coming mm-hmm. back. Mm-hmm. So obviously he's feeling okay. It's a thing to monitor. The one thing I'll say is I don't know if you should buy high, but don't bother selling low, mm-hmm. right? Most of your league isn't going to be interested because every time you offer Christian Yelich in a trade, what are they going to say? Oh, he's got a bad back, which is true, right? It's not wrong, but it's going to mean they're going to devalue Christian Yelich significantly. So instead of trading him away to try to get a boost, your most likely avenue to getting a boost for your team is holding Yelich and letting him like see if he performs, right? I mean, it reminds me of one of the few like victory laps I can take here to a degree is that when we found out about Tatis' shoulder on this very podcast, we kept saying, just hold it. Yes. No one's going to give you what you want for, mm-hmm. you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. No one's going to do it. No one's going to offer you a top five player. Right? As of right now, this moment, Fernando Tatis is the number one player in fantasy, right? at least the number one hitter, right? He's the number one hitter in fantasy. No one was going to trade you anything close to that because what were they going to say? Oh, his shoulder. And they were right. They were right. His shoulder was a problem. But no, like selling your, you know, people say, oh yeah, sell high now. No one's buying high, right? I would have, but nobody wanted to trade him to me in redraft because I would have had to give up a player that I probably wasn't able to draft, mm-hmm. right? It would have to be like a top five going forward player. Nobody would have done it. It happens. But yeah, this is one of those situations where your team, your best shot at your team getting better is Christian Yelich being Christian Yelich. And no one's yep. going to trade you anything close to what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. And what's amazing, just touching upon what you talked about with Tatis. Yes, he's missed time. Even had that week or so where he was out for non-injury, it was COVID. But anytime he came back into the lineup, he hit as if he didn't miss any time. Some players, it takes some time to readjust and whatnot, but it's almost like, you know, putting his hand in a glove, it just fit perfectly. He was just able to, you know, beat Fernando Tatis again. So talk about a couple of Dodgers real quick. Mookie Betts, last I looked, 240 batting average, 5 home runs, 5 stolen bases. Among the top, you know, 3 or 4 batters that were being taken in preseason drafts, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis, Ronald Acuna Jr., I almost thought that he'd be the most reliable to put up the stats that he's been putting up for his career. But, like I said, he's slumping a bit. Expected stats and his actual stats are pretty much in the same ballpark. I really don't see a reason why he's slumping. I don't know if you've noticed anything doing a deep dive. And we'll also talk about Manny Machado, who's slumping as well. You're wondering, he's had some shoulder issues and whether or not that could be contributing to his slow start to the season.
Yeah, so this kind of thing comes up a lot, right? Really good player slumping. Right? It happens. It happens all the time. I look for a couple things right off the bat. The first thing I look for with a player like Mookie Betts is there anything on the basic back of the baseball card stats that are really alarming me, right? Quite frankly, I haven't seen a ton that I'm particularly worried about. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, he's had months like this, right? He's had 2 months like this, right? Where he's been, you know, this isn't like some crazy low point on his overall career. I talk about this every week because it's important, but you go and look at like the rolling stats on his expected WOBA, right? Is this a high point? No. Is this some new low point? No, not even close, right? He's kind of just hovering as this average player right now. And one of the reasons he was drafted so high is not because he necessarily was going to be the best player in baseball for the entire season. It's because his low point is still a usable player.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you can still, he's still got 5 home runs and 5 steals. That's lower than it ought to be. He's got 27 runs scored. He's still useful, right? That's the floor. A player you can still leave in your lineup. I do think things will turn around because he's still Mookie Betts, right? He's not like 35-year-old Mookie Betts. He's 28-year-old Mookie Betts.
Right. Okay.
He's doing a lot of things well. There's nothing to worry about here. Yeah, same for Manny Machado. We've seen him be slow. Mm-hmm. We've seen him have years where batting average is low. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. You're not cutting him. We'll talk about players you can cut later.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't do anything about this. And it stinks. And I wish I could say more than it's going to get better because they're good players. But like, it's going to get better because they're good players.
Yeah.
that's how this works. That's just the way that it is. And especially in a 162 game season, this is what you deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You deal with players being bad for 2 months. In a 60-game season like last year, this is a huge problem.
Yes.
Absolutely, because you don't have time for things to get better.
Mm-hmm.
But you do now. You have time. So just take the time. Leave him in. Don't bench him, for God's sake. Who do you have on your bench that you would project in a single game to be better than Mookie Betts?
The day you bench him is the day he goes 4-for-4 with 2 home runs.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
You don't bench him. You don't do anything. This isn't like a Joey Gallo. Who goes on these crazy slumps and is hurting your team. Mm-hmm. Is he helping your team? Maybe not. Is he hurting it? Not really, right? He's going to do something. He's not. It's not a bunch of offers. 240 isn't great, but it's not 140,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not 200. You let it go. Don't do anything. That's a lot of talk, But I think it applies to a lot of these star players.
Right.
Right. Like, even to an extent of Christian Yelich, you can't bench him because the upside there's too high.
Yes.
It's, you know, if you remember the financial crisis, too big to fail. It's too high. You can't do anything about it right now. If we get some kind of news later that he's playing like without an elbow ligament or something, maybe. But mm-hmm. We don't have any of that. We have a guy who's not hitting as well as he could. Okay.
Yeah, I'll give you one guy I think that maybe is benchable, and he's not in the caliber of a Mookie Betts or a Christian Yelich, but Brandon Lowe for the Rays, batting 0.75 versus lefties, not much better versus righties either, batting 244 against righties, 31% K rate. And I've got to wonder if the Rays are going to start platooning him or even benching him once they start to call up Wander Franco and Vidal Bruján. I mean, you know, I roster him in a couple of leagues, and I'm starting to sit him because he just has been bad this season, especially, like I mentioned, against left-handed bats.
So contact's a problem, mm-hmm. right? It's a big problem. Is he hitting the ball hard? Like, yeah, when he gets a hold of it, he hits the ball pretty hard. Like, that average exit velocity number isn't very good, but the max exit velocity is pretty good. He has he makes a lot of weak contact, especially against lefties, but his expected slugging, the expected, you know, wOBA is actually pretty good. The barrel rate is also pretty high, right? The mm-hmm. problem is he does miss a lot, right? He is just really not been good with the whiffs, like in the bottom 5%. Also, the defense hasn't been very good. He's been a horrible defender on mm-hmm. the season, despite being fast. Like, being fast doesn't mean a good defender, and he's not been a good defender. So really, that's my big issue. I would not worry about this on most teams. I worry about this because it's the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the removing Adames doesn't, you know, might give him a tiny bit of security, as does the fact that he can play multiple positions. But if the Rays feel like they could get some better production against lefties, they will platoon him.
Sure.
Like, that's what they'll do. And I should also mention that as good as he was last season, and as much as I believed in that, this is a real problem. And you can identify a specific thing. He's not hitting lefties, and teams can do stuff about that, like benching you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, just not have you play against tough lefties. They'll let him come in against some back end lefties, but I could easily see them benching him against tough lefties. I hope they don't, but they could. And the other thing is, like, these stats, like this expected batting average of .222, the expected slugging of .450, that's kind of in line with what we've seen from him in the past, right? 2018, mm-hmm. 2019, those were his season-long numbers. So I do think that there's obviously more upside than this. But in a shallow league, 8 or 10 teams, I don't know if I could cut him, but I'm really starting to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, next guy I'll talk about. Well, next two guys, both shortstops. I don't think you're not cutting them, but one of them is the shortstop for my team, the Yankees, Gleyber Torres, slumped badly in 2020, has just 2 home runs on the season, a 0.75 ISO. Another disappointing barrel rate of 4.8 this season, was 3.7 last season, had averaged 9.65 barrel rate from 2018 to 2019. Looked like he was starting to heat up, but kind of tailed off again. Killing off-speed pitches, doing well against breaking balls, but just it's not translating into what we expected from him at the start of the season. And if you listen to sports talk radio in New York, you get some fans are getting a little tired of Torres. They're a little disappointed in his defense and obviously the slumping batting skills. So what do you think about Torres?
So the first thing I want to do is knock a little bit off about that. You know, one of the most powerful narratives we've heard about Gleyber Torres over the last couple of years was that those 2019 stats against the Baltimore Orioles and how everybody says he killed the Orioles and he was bad against everyone else. It should be noted he was not the best Yankee against the Orioles. That honor goes to Gary Sanchez. He actually hit even better against the Orioles. The fact of the matter is that was less about Gleyber Torres just being good against the Orioles and the Orioles being really bad.
Right.
They were a horrible pitching team. Of course he wrecked against them because good hitters wreck bad pitching. Is there concern about what we've seen from him over the last two seasons? Like, Yeah, right. Like the expected stats and a lot of that like underlying data looks exactly the same, right? Like he sort of looks like this 250 hitter. Like he's actually outperforming his expected batting average by a bit, right? Not in a way that's like crazy high, but he's making a lot of weak contact. He's, you know, not chasing a ton, which is great, right? His plate discipline is fine, but he does whiff a little bit. My issue with Gleyber Torres, as it has been for quite some time, is less that I have an issue with Gleyber Torres and just more that in a regular season, like obviously 2019, he was excellent, right? But like what he brings to the table isn't like world breaking, right? He's only 25 years old, right? He's mm-hmm. a young player. 24. He's 24. He turns 25 this season. The problem. So what's he do like in an okay season for him, right? 25 to 30 home runs, less than 100 RBI. That's really good. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's not good. I'm just saying like there's a lot of guys that can do that, especially at shortstop. A lot of players can do this, and he doesn't run.
Right.
Like he has 3 stolen bases this season, which is about halfway to his like his career high. Granted, yeah, he hasn't played.
You don't expect him to do double digit steals. No. You're right. No.
No. So, like, that's the thing. In a shallow league, this is kind of a replaceable player, unfortunately, because mm-hmm. what he gives you, you can get elsewhere. Mm-hmm. In a deeper
especially
league, obviously,
shortstop.
There's just nothing. Yeah. In a deeper league, obviously, there's nothing you can do about this. I think if you invest what you invested in Gleyber Torres is just going to have to wait and hope that he turns it around, hope that he has some hot streaks or something. But if you're in a 10, I'm fine with moving on. You can mm-hmm. find another shortstop to do what he's doing. And yeah. even at his peak, right? You probably can find someone to do that too.
Mm. Next couple players, both showing a bit of a power outage. And Trevor Story, shortstop for the Rockies, 5 home runs through the first 50 games of the season. Matt Chapman for the A's, 5 home runs. You basically drafted him to hit home runs, not for average or anything like that. And wondering if he has some lingering effects from his hip surgery. I think we could just kind of lump them together, even though they play different positions, but just that they're both not hitting as many home runs as we thought that they would.
And that's fine. I kind of... It's tough with Chapman's a little bit more of a concern because, like you said, he's a guy that we really wanted just for the home runs. He doesn't really do a whole lot else. He gets some RBI too because of where he hits in that lineup. So it is a real bummer that we haven't been seeing the power that we quite want. But he's also a guy that can go on ridiculous benders for mm-hmm. power. And he's this type of player. And for whatever reason, this happens to just this type of player, these low average, high power players. We've talked about this before. They're streaky, right? You got to take the bad with the good, right? I mean, mm-hmm. a player that started the season hot, who's a little cold right now is Nate Lau, right? And so he's not hitting great, right? But he was hitting really well. And we see it, right? Another guy in Texas, Adolis Garcia, is one of the best hitters in baseball right now. There's going to come a time when he is not, right? Mm-hmm. And he's actually mm-hmm. on the other end of the spectrum. Because these power hitters, when you swing hard, you miss a lot. And that just is what happens. So, you know, there's nothing in the profile that really stands out. You know, last season for Chapman, I was really worried about that walk rate just falling off a cliff, along with the strikeout rate going way up. The strikeout rate is still too high, right? At his best, he was striking out more like 20 to 25% of the time instead of over 30. But his walk rate is up to 14.2% again. He's doing just enough where I can hold on. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, I'm going to keep saying in shallow leagues, like 8 and 10 team leagues, you don't have to wait for anything. You can just do whatever the heck you want and still have a chance. But in most leagues, I think you got to hold there for Matt Chapman. You know, for Trevor Story, I kind of just don't care. You know, the Rockies are a team where they as a team go on these hot and cold streaks. There's this thing called visual memory index, which is basically how players have to adjust to how pitches move. The Rockies have to go through these crazy changes in how pitches move between home and away series. I talk about this a lot because it's really important. So players sometimes get in little funks and they fix themselves, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Trevor Story has been good and bad over and over and over again for the last several seasons. When we talk about a player being in, you know, with a certain batting average or a certain skill set, we don't mean every single day, right? That's like Mike Trout and Juan Soto and like nobody else, right? Like Fernando Tatis. They can do everything every single day. Most players, they go hot and cold. It happens. Mm-hmm. It's going, I'm going to keep saying it over and over again. A lot of these guys are going to get better. Trevor Story is going to go on like 3 or 4 weeks where in a week, like in a head-to-head league, he just wins it for you by himself. Mm-hmm. Just wait for that, because it's not like he's losing it for you. You know, maybe in a single week you can really complain about his performance, but otherwise, just let these guys work through the adjustments we see, you know, every single season. Those rolling graphs are not all up. It's up then down.
Yeah.
Right now it's down for these guys. It'll get better.
Hmm. And I just want to go back. I think I referred to Brandon Lau as Brandon Lowe, so I apologize for that. I actually know the difference, but it escaped me. So I apologize for.
I'm so bad at it. I apologize deeply. I just overthink it every time. Whatever, yes. I think, like the first thing that comes out of my, like that I want to come out of my mouth is right. And then I'm like, no, wait, that can't be right. Because yes. I'm never right. And it's because of that whole process and I can't get rid of it.
So let's look at the players that have kind of surprised us so far this season. Guys like Mark Canna, who's another unlikely but successful leadoff hitter. And look, the A's just get the most out of their players. First 52 games of the season, 40 runs scored, 10 home runs, .395 on base percentage. And major projection models have him hitting between 14 and 19 home runs more for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, good for him, right? Like, he's showing the plate discipline we've been seeing for quite a while now, right? He was actually, like, kind of this caliber of player back in 2019, except he wasn't stealing bases then, right? So back in 2019, the last full season, he had 26 home runs, right? Walked 13.5% of the time, struck out 21% of the half, like 21.5% of the time, .273 hitter, .517 slug. You know, he's actually like a little worse than that in the batting average department, but obviously he's stolen six bases. He's one away from a career high, despite it being 52 games. Right. Like he's probably going to steal about 10 bases on the season, even if he slows down a bit. Right. Which most projections are going to do. We should point out that projections are still going to focus heavily on the past. Mm-hmm. Right. Because they're not going to there's very few cases where projections dramatically change after 52 games. Right. Especially for a player who before this season had over 500 games under his belt. Right. Like there's just only so much that we can change our forecast and projection based on 52 games, even if we see something really good. Right. Like there's still only so much. Like even Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s projections can only change so much after what he's done. Have they changed? Yes. How much have they changed? Not as much as you might think, because projections are pretty much always going to be on the cautious side. That said, projections look like he can hit like 25 home runs, 26 home runs, steal 10 bases, score a whole boatload of runs, like probably threaten 100 runs scored on the season.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, the batting average won't be spectacular. I expect him to finish the season somewhere around .250 like he has most years since 2018. But hey, that's a heck of a player. And, you know, like that's one of the reasons you stream outfield. In a shallow league, you probably could have just picked him up when he was hot. And he's just stayed hot. And that's great.
Yeah.
And there were probably outfielders you drafted that you could just let go. Those back-end guys, let them go, because every once in a while, a guy like this sticks.
Yeah. Mitch Haniger for the Mariners, finally healthy. Through first 51 games, 14 home runs, 35 RBI. Again, the projection model's optimistic, anywhere from 15 to 21 more home runs. And I get what you're saying in terms of the projection models, and you're absolutely right, using more predictive analysis based on previous production. But little interesting thing with Haniger was, if you read Eno Saris's article for The Athletic, you know, Haniger's really into focusing in on his bat, and Keenan Long runs the Long Ball Bats Lab, and he talks about how Haniger and even Jed Lowry, another A, discovered that using a better bat might cause them to see an extra 2 miles per hour exit velocity difference on their hitting, on their hits. So Haniger's like a fanatic about it, weighs his bats. When they get too heavy, he gets rid of them, studies the knots on his bats, how far the grains are spread apart. But just in summary, he's been hurt for a while. It's good to see him healthy, and he's putting up some really good numbers.
First of all, I love that he nerds out, right? Like, I don't pretend to know how all that stuff impacts it, but if it does, like, great. Be as nerdy as you can, man. Like, nerd it up and, like, do it for my fantasy team as well, right? Yeah. For the Mariners, for you, and for my team. That would be great. So the thing with Haniger, number one, is that if you recall, he was really good before. You know, 2017 and 2018, he was really good, right? And even when he played in 2019, he only played 63 games. He had 15 home runs, right? Like, he was good.
Yes.
The thing has been, obviously, health.
Mm-hmm.
Health. Even now, if you look at the projections, like, none of them have him getting to 150 games. That would just be really aggressive. They have him in, like, the 140s. Zips is probably, like, the most depressing one because it puts him more at, like, 125. But if he plays a full season, like, this is a guy that can hit 30 home runs, right? The stolen bases just aren't going to be there. They weren't ever really before, so don't worry about that. But decent ratios. Like, the only thing I think that might bum me out a little is he's, you know, the RBI totals aren't going to be great. Like, probably 80-ish. Even if he plays, like, 155 games, just because the Mariners aren't very good offensively. Like, I'm sorry if you're a Mariner fan, but this shouldn't be a surprise. The run totals will be better, but only slightly. But this is a really good hitter. And the only reason that, like, you got him at a discount is because it was a giant risk. Because there was this very real, very significant risk that you got a player that played 100 games.
Yep.
I don't think a lot of people doubted the, you know, 150-game talent. It was how much of it could you get? Having not seen him for a while, the last time we saw him was 2019, and he only played 63 games. He had exactly one season with 100 games at the major league level ever, 2018, right? So that's the thing about the risk is you're probably feeling real good right now, right? You probably already got what you paid for.
Especially
in like a 12-team league where you didn't have to pay much to draft him. But, you know, there's still risk going forward. And if I was going to try to trade for a player, this might be one, right? There's probably people looking to cash in their chips and sell high. When I think you're actually, if you're buying, you're buying at fair value.
Right?
And if they think they're selling high and you're actually buying at fair value, I'm all for it. Because they might take a little less than what he probably could be for the rest of the season because they think, like, all they're going to think about is the risk. And yes, you'd be taking on that risk for them. But what if it pays off? I bet you can trade a lesser player if you project, you know, 100 games more. You could get a lesser player or you could use a lesser player to acquire Mitch Haniger. And I think you should. I would at least kick the tires.
Yeah. Another couple of players we'll talk about. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who in Yahoo leagues, eligible still at catcher, but also third base, shortstop in 53 games. 286 batting average, 5 home runs, but 10 steals. And the key to me is that he's only been caught once. So Rangers probably going to keep on letting him run.
Yeah. The biggest surprise for me is when I was coming into the season, I thought Kiner-Falefa would be only relevant in Yahoo leagues because that's where he had his catcher and other leagues that had catcher eligibility for him. And I'm sort of wrong, right? Like, what he's been doing, it's kind of like what we thought Nick Madrigal would do. And we were willing to play Nick Madrigal in standard leagues, right?
Love the comp. 286. Yes.
Yeah. He's been hitting at least, you know, over the last two seasons, right? He's played a little over 100 games. He's hitting 280 in that stretch. Like, the power is absent and it's going to continue to be absent. If he hits 10 home runs on the year, count yourself lucky. Because at the beginning of the season, I would have said that was a stretch, right? But he could also have 20 stolen bases by the end of the year, right? Like, he's already sort of ahead of that.
Yeah.
And he's already got 10. I think you could easily get 10 more. And it's not like the Rangers are, you know, I've talked about this before, but players tend to steal bases, particularly guys who don't have like crazy speed. They steal bases based on the success of their team. Texas is going to need him to steal bases to generate offense, especially when they're not hitting a bunch of home runs because they're a very streaky team. I mean, Robbie Grossman stole a bunch of bases and hasn't done much stealing since because the Tigers are winning games. He stole all those bases when they were bad. Ramon Laureano is slowed down with speed because he stole a bunch when the team was bad and now they're good, so they don't need him to as much. The Rangers are going to need him to steal bases all season to try to win a game. And even though they don't have like playoff aspirations, right, they do want to win games. These are grown men, professional athletes. They want to win games. One of the ways they're going to have to do that is to steal bases. And he will continue to steal bases. He is relevant in 12-team leagues at, you know, at some level, regardless of whether he can catch. That's the big surprise here. That's the big takeaway, is he is a decent back end third base shortstop, especially if you can use him at corner infield or middle infield in, you know, 12 team leagues and up. I never thought I would say that.
And with the number of injuries that have taken place over the past several weeks, having these multi-position eligible players is so key to continued success in fantasy baseball. And if you heard a little noise, it's Sexy Sadie, my cat, just wants some attention, and she kind of slipped on a piece of paper. So where would the Blue Jays be, Scott, without Marcus Semien and Randall Grichuk? I mean, Semien on his way to looks like a 30 home run season, close to 20 steals. If you look at what rest of the season might look like for him, and Grichuk, where would the Jays be without him? 50 games, 286 batting average, 9 home runs, 38 RBI, especially without George Springer. And they've got to keep his bat in the lineup once Springer does return.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I definitely got wrong in the preseason. I ranked Grichuk 69th, which is, you know, a nice ranking, but the thing about it was I didn't think he was going to play, right? Mm-hmm. Randall Grichuk is not like some star defender, although he's been their center fielder, right? And he's fine as a center fielder. But I thought for sure he'd be the one riding the pine, because when Springer, and this is still potentially a thing, depending on if Lourdes Gurriel continues to turn things around like he has been.
Yeah.
When Springer comes back, which we don't know when that is yet, right? When he comes back, one of these outfielders, you know, it looks like right now can go to DH, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm not sure they really want Rowdy Tellez as the DH every single day, because right. he's kind of turned back into the Rowdy Tellez we've seen before. Mm-hmm. And he's just exceptionally streaky, but someone's probably going to go to that DH role. And they, at this point, now it looks like Grichuk will play every day, because when he's not the DH, they'll probably use him to spell one of the other right-handed outfielders, mm-hmm. right? That was kind of the thing, is that they were all right-handed, so they couldn't really platoon with each other other than for a random day off. One of them was going to have to platoon a DH. Doesn't look like that anymore. Grichuk has hit his way into the fifth spot in this lineup behind mm-hmm. Semien, Bichette, Vlad, Teoscar, and then him. It's a great place to be.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, there's not much else to say is, you know, we know what he is on his own. He's like a 25 to 30 home run guy that misses some time, not a ton, but enough, right? Where he's more like 130, 140 game guy. And in that stretch, he'll hit 30 home runs, have an okay batting average. Like, that's still the guy I think he is. Mm-hmm. But now he gets to do that batting fifth for the Blue Jays, who are good now. Right, like at least the offense is, right? The offense is fantastic.
They're good. So, they're going to be playing in a good hitter's park. They just leave in Dunedin, Florida, and then they're going to be playing in a little ballpark up in Buffalo. So that's got to help them a little bit too. Not only are they a talented group, but to play in these good ballparks to hit.
I mean, there's nothing bad you can say about the guy. He's in a perfect opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a player on this roster that could maybe do better in the fifth spot for them? Sure. Like, I think Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s upside is higher than Grichuk. But mm-hmm. right now, Grichuk is batting fifth for the Toronto Blue Jays. That is a must start every single day.
Yeah, yeah. You had some interesting stat that you shared with me before the show about Austin Riley, who Austin Riley, 313 batting average, 10 home runs in his first 50 games. I don't see any glaring weaknesses in his splits. Strikeout rate is up from last season to 28%, but it's still better than the 36% rate that he had in his rookie season. But there are some signs that he's become a bit more disciplined, walking more, 11.4% up from 5.4 in 2019. Chase rate is down for three straight seasons. And it's looking like he's finally coming into his own.
Yeah, it does. And we've had some really nice articles come out about Austin Riley at Pitcher List. We had one before the season, if you read it, by Chad Young. He was pretty convinced that Austin Riley was going to have a chance to have a breakout. We just had another one come out recently. I highly recommend you read those to get a better idea of what's going on with Austin Riley. But, you know, the thing is, I am high on him because people I respect are high on him, right? Mm-hmm. I think this is a 30 home run kind of guy. A very Randall Grichuk kind of guy, to be quite honest with you, right? Like in terms of just fantasy production, I think he's got a lot of Randall Grichuk in his game, right? Power, okay batting average, and, you know, a lot of it is dependent on where he hits in the lineup. And you have to remember, there were times last season, the season before that, And even early this season, he was not hitting in a good place for the Atlanta lineup. But due to some injuries and, you know, who knows how long Marcelo Ozuna is going to be gone for with, you know, he's got the injury. That's at least 6 weeks. And then Lord knows what's going to happen out of this investigation.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see him for the rest of the season.
It's a long road back for him. And that means Austin Riley continues to have a chance to bat like in the right in the middle of this order, like fourth, fifth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just like Grichuk, he's batting in, you know, is this lineup super deep right now? No. But who's batting ahead of him? Right now, he's hitting about fourth. Mm-hmm. It's Acuna, Freeman, Albies, and then Riley. That's a good place to be. A really good place to be, right? And he's pounding the ball right now. Strikeouts are and will continue to be a problem. We have seen Austin Riley be among the best players among the best hitters in baseball for a short time, and then among the worst in baseball for a short time, right? Especially during his rookie season, he famously came out super hot and then was super duper cold. He'll go on these stretches where over 50 plate appearances, he strikes out 40 to 50% of the time. That's a reality, something to be aware of. But right now he's not, and he's batting fourth for a team where at least the top half of this lineup can produce. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just must start every day, and I wouldn't think too hard about it. I don't care so much about his rest of season projection, which, by the way, is about 30 home runs. That's what I think he can do in a full season. Right. That's great, but don't worry too much about the long term. Right now, he bats fourth for Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
That's a rosterable player every single time. If they moved William Contreras, the catcher, into fourth, he immediately becomes a guy to start. This is exactly what happened with Travis d'Arnaud. I was like, yeah, he's a pretty good hitter. And he also bats fourth or fifth. Mm-hmm. So he's got to start. That's what's going on with Austin Riley.
Yeah. I mean, there are some other players, but we're going to move on. But if there are other players that you want us to talk about, just reach out to us at Hacks and Jacks PL. I mean, of course, Yermín Mercedes could be, but we've spoken about him in the past. Adolis Garcia, we've spoken about him. And I mean, anybody that you want us to focus on, please reach out to us. But as we wind down the podcast there, Scott, you actually put together a really good list of players that it might be time to say goodbye to at this point. We could start looking at some of them. These guys are owned or rostered, I should say, in 70% or fewer of leagues. Alec Bohm, third baseman for the Phillies. And from a personal standpoint, I roster him in a 15-teamer. I finally stopped starting him a couple weeks ago. Didn't drop him, just benched him, but I picked up and began starting Brad Miller. And then another guy I'll bring up who's starting to get some rehab starts that you might think of if you're having problems with Bohm is Key Brian Hayes. Keep an eye. He might be on your league's waiver wire.
Yeah. So players rostered in more than 70% of leagues right now, Alec Bohm, Andrew McCutchen, Jesus Aguilar, and I'll get to the last player I listed in just a second because it's a little more controversial, but I do want to talk about it. So Bohm, McCutchen, Aguilar, if they're on your roster in a 12-team league, they don't need to be. Mm-hmm. These guys are utterly replaceable. Aguilar, he was hot for a while, so you probably added him because you needed some depth at first base. Just get someone else. He's been hitting poorly, and even when he's good, he doesn't do anything particularly outstanding, right? He's like a 25 home run corner infield. Don't care. Plenty of those out there.
Yes.
Andrew McCutchen, he doesn't run the way he used to. He still has an okay OBP, but what, 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases? You telling me in a 12-team league you can't find that on the wire? I guarantee you can, at least for a short period of time, right? Mm-hmm. I bet you can find a guy who's going to be better than Andrew McCutchen for the next 2 weeks because he's not been good, and he doesn't do anything so special that you got to just hold on, right? Bohm, I still believe this kid has upside for the future, but you no longer need to wait for it in redraft. 15 team with a corner infield, it just, that's hard depth to find, and there may not be a player that's going to play as often as Bohm for the next couple of weeks, right? Like, because when you start getting to deeper leagues, you run into players who just don't play every day. But if you're in a league like a 12-teamer where there's a bunch of guys on the wire who play every day, I think it's kind of easy to move on at this point, right? It doesn't mean you're going to give up forever. Right? Projections will still like Bohm a little, but you can just pick him up later, right? And not going to be a lot of teams chomping at the bit. And if they are, all the power to him. Let him sit on their bench or in their roster while he's not doing well, right? Mm-hmm. Guys, just move on. Other guy I want to talk about, it's a little controversial. I'm not doing this just for the ratios, I promise. Jared Kelenic. So the thing about Kelenic, obviously, huge upside for the future. But in a 12-team redraft, particularly I'm thinking about the Yahoo 12-team redraft, which is 3 outfield, 2 utility. He's probably on your bench right now because you've probably got 3 outfielders who are better than him now and are probably going to be better than him for the rest of 2021, right? Will they be better than him in 2022? I don't know. Probably not, right? I love the upside of Kelenic, but that's the thing. There's only so many prospects you can hold onto a roster. And if you've got short benches, especially if you're being crushed by injuries right now, it's okay. Let him go, right? Could this be a Trout situation where you really regret it when he finally turns it around? Yes. But how much do you want to pay for that? Right? Right now, if you've got to a point where, you know, you're really tough, you've got guys on the IL who you have to keep on the bench because you're out of IL spots, Kelenic is a guy I'd be thinking of letting go if I if I don't have any other obvious choice because he's just not playing that well right now.
You know, it's a perfect example of the riskiness that comes with making fab bids on prospects. I mean, yes, they could, you know, fulfill all their expectations, but, you know, Kelenic is struggling and he's a lot better than what he's showing right now, no doubt. But if you invested a ton of your fab already, it just now you're at a disadvantage, not only because he's either taking a spot on your bench or just dragging your fantasy team's batting average down. And on top of that, now you're out a ton of fab.
Yeah. And I should say, I'm not just saying cut him for the sake of cutting him. Mm-hmm. I just mean, if you're in a crunch and there's a good player out there on the wire that you need now, Kelenic's not helping you right now. And it's hard to imagine he's going to help you over the next couple of weeks. Could he? Yes. But in some of my shallow redraft leagues, like some home leagues and stuff like that, I did add him, and I'm in one league I let him go, and in another I'm pretty much ready to because I just need those bench spots for something else. I have so few of them. They're at a premium. I can't use them on a guy who I don't think is going to hit right now. He will eventually, but not now. Real quick, I'll go through the guys. These are rostered in greater than 40% of leagues that I'm ready to drop, and this list is just quite a bit less controversial. But Miguel Rojas, he's on the IL right now. If you've got unlimited IL, go ahead and leave him there. But most of you don't, and most of you got plenty of other guys that are sitting on your IL. Miguel Rojas does not need to be. Let him go. It's cool. He was doing well. He was hitting the ball well, but he's not so good that I would just like keep him over many of the other guys that have gotten injured lately. Jorge Soler, we've been talking about this for a while. He's a power hitter, not hitting for power. Just let it go. Didi Gregorius, this is sort of like some other guys I've talked about, but basically when he's good, he doesn't do anything so special that you just got to hold him. In a 12-team league, he's a very average shortstop, and I bet you can stream a better one. Another, you know, you probably already know this because you're a Yankee guy, Gary Sanchez. I ranked him 8th coming into the season, and he was at the beginning of a tier of catchers where if they were struggling, I was going to tell you to cut them, right? So like right now, if you're sitting there and Gary Sanchez is your starting catcher and Mitch Garver happens to be out there.
Oh, yeah.
You make that swap right now.
Right.
They're owned in like a similar number of leagues. So this is actually a real possibility, right? Or there's someone else who's like, you know, I'm not cutting him for absolutely nobody, but if there's a decent, you know, if Yadi Molina, he's rostered in quite a few leagues, but if he is out there, easy, right? Obviously, those are like some of the easy ones, but honestly, if there's like a decent catcher who's maybe going on a 4-game road trip to Colorado, I might just do that, right? if Sean Murphy is going to play in Colorado, give me Sean Murphy.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? He's slumping. He's slumping right now, but I don't care, right? Because Gary Sanchez is too. Finally, Ryan Mountcastle, a guy I liked a lot. He's just not doing it. 12-team league, you don't need to hold. Jed Lowry did his normal like beginning of the season on fire thing, and it's over. You can let him go. He was making a lot of contact, but even when he wasn't hitting a ton of home runs. He wasn't driving in some crazy amount of runners. He's just Jed Lowry. Finally, David Fletcher, super, you know, flexible in terms of your roster, but you don't want to start him in any of those spots. You can put him basically anywhere in your lineup, and you still don't want to start him. That means you can probably let him go, right? He's not one of your top 2 second base, shortstop, third base, or outfield right now. So just let him go. I like him a lot. I think he's got a cool skill set, but it's not working right now. And he was only a like 2 category player to begin with, right? He was supposed to score runs and have batting average. He's not hitting for a lot of average, and he's not scoring a lot of runs. So he's got to go.
And then
finally, 2 guys you mentioned, I'll just throw out there, Nick Madrigal, 12-team leagues, 10-team leagues. You just let him go. Because he's not stealing bases. And if he's not stealing bases, that batting average at the bottom of that order is worthless. Let it go. Mm-hmm. And Miles Straw, I really did believe, along with one of my other co-host friends, Rich Holmes, I really thought that Miles Straw could compete for like the AL stolen base title with Aldobero Mondesi, but he's not stealing bases. And he's certainly not doing anything else. So unless you're in a very deep league and stolen bases are a true premium, Miles Straw can go and hit the wire.
I was right there with you and your co-host about Miles Straw. And I, of course, it hurts that the Astros were talking about batting him towards the top of the batting order. Now he's batting eighth every day. So I'm with you. And great stuff, Scott. Great stuff as always. That's it for this week. So I want to thank you for allowing us to visit with you. We hope that you were informed and entertained because, of course, that's our goal.
Are you not entertained?
You can follow me at Joe Galina. Follow Scott at If The Chew Fits. Follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. And if you follow at Pitcher List Pods, you'll be informed anytime that a new episode drops for any of the great podcasts on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a stellar 5-star review. As always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.